I'm Kate Remington. I'm talking with Peter Ongen of the Yale Philharmonia. You'll be conducting a concert on Friday evening at 7:30 at Woolsey Hall. And this just sounds like such an interesting program. Peter, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us about it.
It's a pleasure, Kate.
Really, I think the centerpiece of the program is Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And when I thought about it, it's such an amazing piece to teach musicians about, because Stravinsky was such a brilliant orchestrator and the story is so intense. And is that why you chose it for this program?
I suppose there's many reasons why one might choose the Rite of Spring, but certainly if I just look at the Yale Philharmonia and how it's developed in the last several years, since Yale School of Music became tuition free, of course, we attract students from all over the world who can come and get a master's degree, you know, without having to borrow an incredible amount of money from the bank, as people very often do, to go to college nowadays. And so the level of playing is just absolutely remarkable. And even though this is the first concert, which means that more or less half the orchestra are new students, I thought, let's just dive in and challenge them with something that is rhythmically complex, but that is so clear from a dramatic point of view that they can all give of themselves quite freely. And, you know, you'd be amazed nowadays at the level of rhythm. I played the Rite of Spring first time in 1974, when, of course, I was a baby. But, but you know, it was hard for us. We weren't used to that kind of thing. But the young kids of today, they really don't... first rehearsal is yet to happen, actually. But they really don't have a problem with this kind of rhythm. So I think it's going to be very exciting.
I'll bet. Why do you think it is that it's so much easier for young performers now? Is it because of their much more rigorous music education, or just that they're exposed to many, many more different kinds of music?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of those two things. Certainly the education is very strict, and, you know, we all certainly had to study rhythm and harmony and so on, you know, in order to pass and get a degree. But it's actually more to do with the fact that, you know, Bartok is no longer a modern composer, and, you know, they've played music by all kinds of composers that write very, very complex things, composers like Lutoslavsky and so on. And so next to that, looking at a Stravinsky score is relatively straightforward. To them, and so I think they're just used to the complicated rhythms, and they expect them, and they're not baffled by them the way you know, my generation and previous generations might have been.
Yeah, actually, Rite of Spring is the reason why I'm not a conductor now, because when I was in music school trying to be a conductor, that was our very first project assignment. Right out
well,
of the gate.
Well, that's unfair. No, I don't think any of us knew that Kate Remington wanted to be a conductor. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's why I'm on the radio now. But Rite of Spring, that was the real deal breaker. I am just not cut out for this.
Well, you know, I think it was one of the very first times I conducted the Rite of Spring. I had just come home from Toronto, and I was on my way to Denver to conduct it. And my son said, come on, Dad, it's a beautiful Sunday morning. Let's go and play some baseball. So I went out, and it had been raining fiercely for about 2 weeks and then stopped raining completely for 3 days. Anyway, ground was very, very hard. I caught something that he hit, fell on my shoulder, and broke my collarbone.
Oh, no.
And the next day I flew to, this seems irrelevant so far, but the next day I flew to Denver, and I was strapped in completely, and it was my right arm. And I had to conduct the Rite of Spring with only my wrist. I mean, I could sort of move my elbow from my elbow a little bit, but basically with my wrist.
Wow.
And that is actually the best way to conduct the Rite of Spring. But anything that's complicated rhythmically, you know, if you watch conductors who are really experienced, you cannot do big gestures when it's complicated rhythmically. It has to be just very, very precise. And then everybody just gets into that rhythmic swing of things much more easily.
I'm sure, because you're not like you're not trying to micromanage them, I guess, basically. So,
well, it's just visible. You know, when it's too big, it's really not very visible what's actually going on.
Right.
It's an interesting business.
I'm sure. Well, it must be so interesting to go from the first concert of a season where, as you mentioned, many of the members of the orchestra are there for the first time, and then finish up at the end of the year when they really do feel like a cohesive unit. It must be a real amazing journey that you take them on.
Yeah, it is very interesting how they get to know each other. They get to know each other's pulse, how to create certain sounds. It does develop very naturally in that way, as a string quartet would. So I'm looking forward very much, because at the end of the year, we're doing Mahler 9, and then they're going to do Beethoven 9, actually, with Marin Alsop. So they have very challenging programs throughout the year, which will help them develop. Ein Heldenleben with David Robertson. And then I'm doing Bruckner 8, the first version of Bruckner 8. That's all just in the next 6 weeks, really. Many other fabulous programs as well.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, going back to the program for Friday the 15th, it's really remarkable to me that only 3 years separate the next newest piece on the program, the Vaughan Williams Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis, which was written only 3 years before Rite of Spring. And so, I mean, there tends to be a kind of an element of nostalgia in a lot of Vaughan Williams music, but it's just remarkable that the change in music in those 3 years is really incredible.
What's interesting about it, actually, is that, you know, the Vaughan Williams looks back, of course, to the Tudor period, inspired by a motet of Thomas Tallis, which, by the way, we'll have a couple of verses sung by a small Yale choir before we go into the Vaughan Williams, which I'm really looking forward to, because I've performed this piece many, many times, but I've never done this, so that'll be interesting. But here he's looking back to Tudor times. Actually, then 3 years later, as you point out, Stravinsky writes The Rite of Spring, and he's looking actually much further back. He's looking back to primitive times, and so... this very primitive Russian ritual, this idea that he's depicting for stage, of course, you know, because after all, Rite of Spring was a ballet. So as the music gets newer, its references get older.
That's really remarkable. I hadn't thought about it that way, but because Rite of Spring was just such a revolutionary work at the time, which it's probably surprised everybody, because even Stravinsky's earlier works weren't quite that out there, I guess, or pushing the envelope.
You're right. And it was the fact that in many ways, you know, if you look at the score of The Rite of Spring, some of it is much more simple than, let's say, the score of The Firebird. Even there's a tremendous amount of repetition. Now, the chord structure might be different because, you know, he plants one perfectly normal chord over another perfectly normal chord, puts them together, and you have this extraordinary dissonance and tension. But then he repeats it over and over again in many situations in the piece. The rhythms are relentless, and there's not a lot of variety in a way. So it's a fascinating way of creating new sounds.
Yeah, and no one had heard anything like it, which is just amazing. And then also on the program is Mozart Symphony No. 40, and I remember this one from my musical history class because it's such a great example of an absolutely perfectly composed classical symphony. And is that why you put it on this program?
Absolutely, yeah. They're all sort of my very favorite imaginable pieces anyway, but I thought that if you have it's like three orchestras. It's going to be like listening to three concerts in a way, because you have this huge, lush, rich, romantic string sound in the Vaughan Williams with not one but two orchestras. There's an orchestra at the back of nine players that play, they're kind of the voice of angels, but they play a little bit what seems like an echo orchestra. And then there are solo parts as well. So you get this very big, lush, rich, romantic string sound. And at the end, you have a massive orchestra doing outrageous things for 35 minutes in The Rite of Spring. And I thought, how lovely would it be in the middle of that to hear a perfect classical symphony? You know, as you point out, it's a score that is so perfect, you can't imagine a world in which that didn't exist. So I think it makes for a very, very interesting evening.
Yeah, definitely. And the nice thing, well, I think the really wonderful thing for audiences is there's nothing more familiar than Mozart, really. It's sort of like being at home. I mean, it's very grounding. And so then you can take people out to these other fringes of there, and they'll be willing to go with you because they've been grounded with the Mozart. So,
right, yeah, it's all about juxtaposition. You know, I mean, composition is about juxtaposition, programming is about juxtaposition. And so, I think you know you have to know how to deal with people's appetite and satisfy them the best possible way with every program you do.
Definitely. Well, it sounds like it's a kickoff to a really phenomenal season with the Yale Philharmonia. And Peter, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time to just give us a taste of what's in store. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, Kate.